Welcome to Bankless Africa, a podcast by Africans on building and innovating Web3 into a new frontier for the people of Africa. I'm your host, Miss Purple, and each episode, I get together with some wonderful people across the continent and the diaspora to talk, ideate, and dream about the bright future of our people. Stay tuned for another exciting episode. Today's guest is a passionate leader. He goes by the name of Babs to many, but his full name is Emmanuel Babalola, and he's the Chief Executive Officer for Bundle Africa since July 2021, as well as the Director of Binance Africa since April 2020. I'm super excited to be able to have this conversation. After all, for many of us, Binance has been able to cement itself in all our hearts because it has been able to provide a gateway of entry. And I am beyond ecstatic to be speaking with you today, Babs. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm pleased to meet you and happy to be here.
Yes, very, very happy to finally have you. I mean, it's been an honor to just kind of to watch it all happen. You know, when you talk about it versus when you participate in the ecosystem, it's something completely different. So I'd like to talk to you specifically about your individual experience within the space. You know, you got started in crypto and within the entire space as a whole quite early on. Can you give us a quick overview of that journey leading up to where you are today? Because of course, you know, being a CEO of one of the largest crypto companies in the world is no small feat. How has that journey been?
I think my journey largely isn't too interesting per se. But let me just start by my general background is largely product, business, and leadership. When I entered the university in 2011 to study computer science, my goal was to be a hacker, right? You know, but somehow that didn't happen. And, you know, like every other student, you know, we had to put in the extra work to learn the skill sets we needed to build the kind of apps that we wanted to build. So back then in school, I did a lot of competitions and hackathons, you know, including one called the eSpawn Software Competition, which was the largest indigenous one back then. All this time, you know, I basically had to do some business on the side to, you know, augment for the work my parents also did for me to push me through school. And in doing this, because there was a lot of responsibility, I had to like start a barber shop. You know, I was also a main distributor for a huge beauty product line in the South Nigeria then, and did rental businesses. And got involved in school politics. So that was one of my passion, you know, to just, you know, ensure that, you know, things are moving in the right direction, you know, wherever I find myself. And so I got involved in the SUG in the university, and all the while being the president of the top, you know, campus fellowship in school. Despite all this, I still managed to be around the top one or two of my class, mostly top two, you know. But while in school, I found crypto, right? And then we wanted to make a payment for a business, which ended up being a Ponzi scheme, you know, surprise. And what really fascinated me was the ability to, you know, send value halfway across the world to someone I'd never met before via this technology. And, you know, it just got me hooked. And since 2016, I've been here. I didn't go full time into crypto immediately at this time in my last years in uni. I was already working full time at Complus Tech, building security and SaaS solutions with Peter Hesse, who was the first person that gave me an opportunity to find and discover myself. And for 3 years, you know, really made profound impact on my journey, such that by the time I left in 2017, I was already VP of sales of one of our flagship products called Church Plus, you know, being used by a lot of major ministries in Nigeria. After then, I organized and attended hundreds of meetups, mostly physical. It was a very small space then. Everybody basically knew each other. And, you know, after a while, a few of us came together and founded Nigeria's Blockchain Association, CBAN, where I was Pioneer's General Secretary from 2018 up until 2020. And, you know, today I still play a key role in the advisory board for the association. My goal has always been to enable freedom and prosperity for the African experience through technology. And this, you know, has inspired most of my work, you know, within the industry. Prior to Binance, I had a successful career as a growth specialist for a number of crypto businesses at home and abroad. In fact, I was, you know, working at a competitor when a friend of mine, Munachi, reached out to me to introduce me to the Binance hiring team then. And that was when I met Yele, who was, you know, then a director at Binance Labs, which is the VC arm of Binance, that did a lot of the initial work in making Binance more visible in Africa by investing in some of the earlier on, you know, crypto companies that were invested in the 2017-2018 batch. My role, however, back then was to take responsibility of the dot-com business, which was our core business, and to grow it starting from Nigeria to SA and to the rest of Africa. I was talking to one of my SA friends that the way I see Africa is, if Africa was shaped like a gun, Nigeria would be the trigger of that gun. You know, and in reply, he said that SA will be the place where the bullets comes out from. So, anyways, so that's kind of like my background leading up to when I joined Binance in 2019.
You mentioned that, you know, earlier you've come across people who try to build, but then it ended up as a Ponzi scheme, and it was kind of followed with like a surprise, because it's true. There's so many of them that happen everywhere these days. It's extremely scary to see it happen, to see people lose so much of their passion for the space as well because of incidents like that. But there seems to be this separate mindset that people like you and people like Yele tend to have, where you're genuine about the innovation you want to bring to the space. And these kinds of mindsets seem to be scattered across the continent. What do you think it is that draws or essentially connects people like you guys, people who are genuine about wanting to build? Why are there so few of us, you know, or a few of you who are trying to do that in a very selfless manner?
I think, like same as for every new technology, there are going to be parties who seek to take advantage of it to do harm. Crypto is like a kitchen knife. It can either be used to commit murder or to cook food, right? And some of the founders and the guys I've spoken with before, and also, you know, Yele and myself, some of the key things we believe in is that, you know, the continent can potentially be the new frontier for this next industrial revolution. For every change, global change that has happened, you know, Africa has largely been behind, you know, each time. You know, we do not have the most unicorns in the world. We do not have, you know, we are not always the first or some of the most involved people in terms of the global scheme of things. But crypto, being a decentralized community, has allowed Africans utilize this opportunity to really bring something, you know, back home to the continent. And one of the things we've seen is, I like to tell people that, like, blockchain itself has the most use cases in Africa. If there is anywhere that blockchain can work and crypto will work, it will be on this continent. People in Africa aren't really, you know, pro traders who are like drawing charts and drawing lines on a graph, trying to, like, you know, do like high frequency trading and all that, you know, cool stuff, you know, in Wall Street. People in Africa are just doing P2P trading. People in Africa are trying to send money back home. They're trying to, you know, just earn an extra income so they can put themselves through school or to put food on their table for their families, right? One of the key things that I'm really, really excited about is the fact that crypto helps, you know, redistributes wealth. It helps push more and more people out of the poverty line, right? It helps improve the African experience. And I think this is something that I am really, really excited about. And this is the main difference between the builders and the takers, right, from the industry. The builders are looking to add value to the African experience, to add value to the continent. But there would always be people who are seeking to rip people off and build, you know, platforms, call them fancy names and all that, or promise high returns, you know, to people. So it's just a mindset, right? And this is not just limited to crypto. Even in the traditional sector, you know, scams are still there. They still exist. And there are still guys that are driving the real use cases and also pushing, you know, away these bad actors. That is even why we started the Blockchain Association, you know, to be a self-regulatory body and see how we can, like, you know, say, okay, these are the good guys, and basically, you know, these are the bad guys, right? So it's a lot of work, you know, train people how to identify scams, how to avoid them. And I think we spent the bulk of our work back then in Binance to educate the continent in terms of crypto education, the basics, right? Where we reached over 600,000 people. So that's kind of like, you know, what I think is the main, you know, difference in mindset.
I 100% agree with your kitchen knife analogy, because you can do phenomenal things with the kitchen if you know how to use it, you know. But if you hold the knife wrong, or you use it with somebody who has absolutely no idea how to handle it, you can have a very serious injury on your hands. So it's all about perspective and how you view the thing, you know, and what it means to you and how you value it. But also, you know, I'm curious to know if they've been setbacks for you specifically serving as the director of Binance Africa.
Yeah, there's been definitely a lot of setbacks. The biggest one was back in 2021, when there was a ban in Nigeria on banks from working with exchanges. You know, that definitely affected us a lot. So there's regulatory disadvantages that Africa has generally experienced when it comes to crypto, because most of the key countries in Africa, except recently in South Africa, where the central bank ruled that banks can work with crypto, most of the key countries are still a bit skeptical. So that regulatory aspect is one big challenge that, you know, we've experienced. And at the beginning, you know, it was so difficult for us to really introduce the products to the market, because, you know, people who weren't wearing shoes, you're coming to sell shoes for them, right? So it was something that we had to, you know, start from where they were in terms of fiat channels, you know, having direct deposits to the platform, to, you know, showing them how they can actually use this as a new form of, like, you know, money, you know, payment system, if it were. So that's kind of like been the journey. There's been a lot of challenges in that front, re-educating the people, because then, like, all people knew were MMM scams here and there, because that was what was prevalent, right? Because same as for most sectors, for any new emerging tech, the first people to take advantage of it is the bad guys. Someone was asking me, why is that the case? A simple analogy would be all the movies you watch, between the good guys, the cops, and the bad guys, the thieves. Who has the most tech most of the time? It's usually the bad guy. Yeah, exactly. So they are always looking for new ways to you know, cheat the system, right? So that's why, you know, a lot of people got burnt at the beginning. But now, you know, we had to solve that problem back then, and I think we did a bulk of that work. And, you know, today, at least, a lot of people don't think crypto is scam, right? They see it on in Nigeria Idol, they see it in the AFCON Championship, they see it in Super Bowl, right? And, you know, so there's less fright for crypto and more of, okay, how do I get started, you know, kind of questions today.
You are, of course, extremely intentional about teaching and training people, and Have you been able to see that result in a physical manner already? Or do you think it's one of those things that it will eventually, you know, it will show itself, the results of the people that you've been able to train and how they've been able to permeate into the space themselves and maybe either start working with Binance or start operating using Binance for their everyday endeavors in the crypto space? Do you think that's still going to take a while, or are you already seeing the results of all that training you've been putting in with these people?
Yeah, we already seen the results. Most of the education work started in 2019. Prior to that time, we were organizing several meetups. Then if we organize a crypto event, it might be like maybe 10 people that would attend, right? Today, if we organize a crypto event, you'll see like 1,000 people come, right? So that's a big change. That's one. Secondly, platform-wise, one of the things we observed after every masterclass that we did, because, you know, I pioneered something called the Binance Masterclasses, where we like basically did a lot of educational work for hours, you know, long, like 6 hours, 3 hours stretch, you know, teaching about, oh, this is crypto, this is this, this is that. And for every time we finish such trainings, most of the attendees end up becoming, you know, crypto users almost immediately, because it's something that they had either heard before, but maybe had a wrong information about, and just realized that, okay, this thing isn't actually what I thought it was, and this is how I can get started. And they just basically get started on their journey. A lot of those people today are, you know, crypto OGs, NFT influencers, and all that stuff. So that work has paid off both in the individual lives of these young people, and also on the platform side, because there was definitely growth that we saw. A bulk of that growth came from people telling people about, you know, our work, and also telling people about crypto. And, you know, there's a ripple effect. If we reach 600,000 people, each of those people has at least one friend that they will talk to about crypto. So, yeah.
I used to come across a few of them being talked about on Twitter. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, heavens, what is this about? You know, and that was a while back. But now I'm kind of like, I wish I had gone or found ways to get information. But it's really exciting to see that growth, you know, to see those numbers move in that way. Now, of course, Binance Africa is heavily, heavily ingrained and based in Nigeria. And Nigeria is the sixth most populous nation in the entire world with 218 million people. Was this what kind of helped you make the decision in terms of where you were going to cement yourself in a physical sense to build and develop this crypto frontier for Africa? Or was there something else about Nigeria that drew you to them?
So part of the things that helped us realize that Nigeria was like a good place to start was because the country itself and the resilience of the people there are quite, you know, admirable. Back in 2019, Nigeria was the top country in the world with the most searches for the word Bitcoin on Google. And today it still is, you know, I think top two or top three. So there is, you know, profound interest in crypto in Nigeria. And basically starting the business in Nigeria was one of the best moves that we made. We do not, however, have like physical, you know, offices in Nigeria. We do have a hub that was opened recently by the Africa team in Francophone Africa. But that's kind of like pretty much it. One of the key things that we've successfully done as a team is to build a fully remote and decentralized, you know, organization. Though Binance has some offices in Dubai and and France, but that's kind of like largely it in Africa.
Launching the initiatives like the zero fee charge for South Africa, just on the heels of the banks essentially encouraging them to participate in crypto, is that you continuing to expand across the continent, or would you consider that to be more just the beginning of things? You know, would you say that there is a ton more of it to come, or are you going to kind of keep it more selective?
Okay, yeah. Knowing the current leadership of the Africa team, I largely believe that they're just getting started. Really, there is still a lot in the pipeline that would, you know, be coming out soon, you know, across Africa. So you can rest assured that, like, there's a bunch of more work to be done on the continent. And South Africa has always been, you know, even back then, a very important country to really get a foothold in, the same way we've successfully, you know, scaled the business in most parts of Africa, including Nigeria. And I think the team is the right team, and they're able to actually, you know, grow their markets.
From a more technological standpoint, we are, as a continent, we're lacking quite a bit when it comes to infrastructure. And of course, we're still at the earliest stages when it comes to even participating in all of these technological shifts and all of that. But something seems to have shifted in a way in terms of how we approach technology. What would you say that shift has been? You know, is it crypto that's doing all of that, or is it just a delayed onset of skill application?
Yeah. One thing that we have in Africa has always been a huge youth population, right? A lot of builders in the industry today are still under 30. I myself am under 30, right? And one of the things that we've seen happen prior to now is, you know, even looking at the dot-com, you know, bubble and how that whole thing panned out, you'd realize that a lot of our African talents basically were exported. You know, they had to go work in Apple, Microsoft, and some of the global companies, you know, abroad to pick up, you know, the necessary skills that were needed to actually grow the continent. Today, you know, if you look at the huge amount of startups coming out, both in tech and crypto, across Africa, you realize that a lot of these founders are working with teams that has the capability to build the infrastructure that is necessary, right? Every CTO has, you know, most likely a background building, you know, that kind of infrastructure somewhere else, because the educational system in Africa, you know, doesn't really equip you with what you need to get to the point where you can actually just, you know, be a young school leaver and want to start a company, right? So that experience that, you know, happened, you know, over the last, say, 15 years is what is helping us today on the continent, because now there are a lot of mentors, now there are a lot more VC interest on the continent. So it's just the right time, right? It's just how time and chance just collide. And it's just made Africa a very huge, you know, opportunity for entrepreneurs that can see it and take advantage of it.
You, of course, you know, as we mentioned, you joined Binance quite early on. So your experience in terms of how you were found and how you were brought on was completely different. It was much, much easier back then. But now you've all grown and it's kind of expanding. But on the other hand, it's often said that the educated people are the ones who tend to leave the continent and they don't really want to come back once they've seen better and they kind of access better. But the pandemic definitely slowed that down a little bit, right? More people seem to be more intent about, okay, I'm either going to go back home or I'm just going to stay here if you're already here, right? Because we seem to have this intention behind developing the continent now. How has that shifted and how you all recruit, you know, newer innovators and radicalists across the continent, especially when you don't have something physical in terms of offices and all of that outside of the hub?
Yeah, I quite agree with you. Before now, it was a lot easier to meet Susie, for instance, or to meet, you know, anybody, right? You could just, you know, attend an event and just meet this guy. This guy, you're CEO of a company. Wow, okay. You know, so it wasn't that big of a deal then, because in the entire event, there's just like 10, 15 people, right? So, but now it's a lot bigger. When I joined Binance, there were probably around 200 people, right? Now it's over 5,000, right? So it's a lot, you know, more, you know, competitive. However, in terms of hiring, like Abundo currently, you know, one of the key things we look at, you know, in terms of hiring is, you know, skill set. Whether you are a crypto OG or not, I think the priority is just really about who is the right culture fit and who has the right skill set. That's one of the things I kind of like, you know, started advocating for recently, which is, you know, beyond, you know, being a crypto influencer or a crypto educationist or, you know, and all that, more people need to acquire the relevant skills that the traditional sector, you know, in quotes, would have, right? So if I wanted to hire a data specialist today, I want to hire a guy that understands data science, right? And data engineering. I wouldn't just want to hire you because you know about crypto and because you are passionate about crypto. So it's easy to train the data science guy to, you know, about crypto and just give him like a 2 months training, and he'll basically know, you know, a lot about crypto, even though nobody can know like everything, like new things come out every day. Point being that the focus really on one side is about skill, right? In terms of on the like really honing your skills and being the top 1% in wherever you find yourself. That is one. On the second aspect of you know, talent migration, there is really, for remote companies like ours, Abundo, there is really no difference, to be honest. The whole idea of having a remote company, you know, brings add several advantages, even though there are also certain disadvantages that you have to do it. One of the key advantages of running a remote company is that you can hire globally, right? You could have employees working across 16 different countries in over 5 different time zones, right? So it's something that you know, even empowers a platform like ours to run 24/7, because while some people are going to bed, some people are just waking up, right? So it's important to you know, also look at it from that perspective. So basically what I'm saying in essence here is talents are always going to migrate, right? Talents are always going to move, you know, from Nigeria outside, you know, from Lesotho outside or back to Africa, right? But being remote helps you, you know, navigate that. Then on the second front, one of the biggest things, one of the biggest reasons why there's a lot of exports, you know, of talent in Africa is due to like the obvious challenges. Today, you know, like access to things like internet, cheap, fast internet, you know, it's still a problem in a lot of countries, right? People in those, you know, regions may not have the same opportunity to work in a company like Bundle or Binance because they don't even have access to the internet. So they can't even work remote. They have to go to the office, right? So there are fundamental things that need to be put in place for the continent to open up itself to those opportunities, right? So that is something key that we also have to look at. But in general, as I said, like talent will always move from place to place. Talent would move from, you know, Apple to Microsoft, from one bank to another, from one exchange to another. It's also part of the training, you know, even for that individual to gain more experience across these different, you know, industries or workplaces, so that one day that person can be a great founder or a great leader, you know, in whichever organization they end up in.
No, 100%. I do think that, you know, in as much as talent does migrate, we can't blame them for migrating, because if there's no opportunity for you to evolve and to grow, nobody wants to stick around for that, you know. And if we put up with that, then nobody has the motivation to innovate and to create something that could bring the talent back home and give them a reason to develop for their people, because we can't all be heroes, you know. Sometimes you can only do what you're able to do, and you can only go as far as you're able to go. So this is essentially just a call to every innovator out there to keep developing on the continent and keep giving our people a reason to stick around and to build for us, you know, because it would have been a shame to, say, lose somebody like you if a Binance Africa didn't come around. You would have been snatched up by someone else, you know. So also your opinion then on this next point is about the free zone that Binance Africa is in talks with the Nigeria Export Processing Zones Authority to kind of have into play. How much can you share with us in terms of how it relates to the ban that is currently in place in Nigeria? I know it's a similar model to what is already happening in Dubai. So what can you share on that in terms of the relativity of them?
Okay. So I don't think so. Generally, I know that Binance like definitely continues to support blockchain adoption across the African continent, and like it's always keen to collaborate. And I believe that partnership is with the Nigeria Export Processing Zones Authority. And the key goal, it would be to probably establish a virtual free zone with the aim of generating long-term economic growth through like digital innovation. So, but they haven't shared any more details since that announcement. Personally, I was with the team of the tech city. That's the team, like, you know, on the ground for the project recently. And, you know, I see what they're trying to build, and I think it's really, really profound. It'll be great, you know, to see how the other regulators, you know, also participate and engage with that initiative. But generally, I do not have a lot of information about it. But I do know that it is definitely a long-term, you know, relationship in terms of from a strategic perspective in Nigeria.
So in closing of for this episode, we usually ask our guests to give us three words on how they feel about the space. But for this one, because this is a special episode with two parts, we're going to leave that question for the next one. Thank you so much for giving us the time to speak with you in terms of the work that you're doing in Binance. And I'm very excited overall. I know we say this a lot in Satsangwe, that we always have one or other announcement to make about Binance, specifically Binance Africa and everything that you are all expanding towards, especially the education element. So kudos to you and your team. I personally think you're doing a phenomenal job. You have your biggest fans here in Bankless Africa. We are very proud, and it's pretty cool, you know, to be able to see all of that happen in front of your eyes. So it's been quite a journey so far, and I'm looking forward to see more of what it is you are looking to build. Are there, you know, little tidbits you can share with us in terms of future plans Binance Africa has for the continent and for the different countries you're already establishing yourselves in?
I would love to, but nothing right now. I would, you know, potentially connect, you know, some of the guys in the team with you, so you can get kind of like some exclusive updates from them.
No worries with that. No worries. I'm just generally excited. And, you know, I think this episode has just kind of shown just how much it takes, you know, how much it takes out of just simple passion and a person who fully dedicates themselves to the cause. So thank you again so much. Be sure to catch next week's episode, where we'll talk more on Bundle and the social revolution that it is bringing about. So until next time, thank you for listening.
Thank you for spending another episode with me. Just a reminder that none of what we share is financial advice, only opinions of the individuals that make this show possible. You can use the links in the show notes to do your own research. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and give us a rating on whatever platform you're listening from. We are our own wildest dreams, the hope of our own tomorrow. So until next time, keep innovating.